chat a little bit, and then I will introduce you formally. Mm-hmm. And I just want to, you know, what I want to do is I want to test the tape recorder and see how your voice picks up and whether I have to go a little closer or whether the microphone, you know, how everything will work out. So this is very, very informal, and we'll just take it from here. And let's see, I think I'm going to stop this and then we'll check it. This is Tonya Copel interviewing Professor Rudolf Signer for the Center for History of Chemistry. We are at his home in Gümlingen in Bern, Switzerland, and the date is September the 30th, 1986. Also present is his son Peter, professor for geo and cosmochronology at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich. Professor Signer, I would like to start the interview with a few questions about your early childhood. You were born in 1903 in Herisau, Switzerland. Could you tell me something about your parents, your father?
Yes. The family is owning over many generations a textile firm. And now my oldest brother has his sons running this firm.
Yes.
So there are six or seven generations of Signer working in this field of dyeing and bleaching textiles.
Oh, that's very interesting. Did that have an influence on you, on your study in chemistry?
Yes.
It did.
I was very interested in two things in my youth, in astronomy and in philosophy. And my father told me when I have made the maturité, don't study philosophy, because you will not earn a living with this theoretical field. Take either mathematics or physics or chemistry.
Uh-huh.
And so I took chemistry.
You took his advice.
Yes, and that lies in the line of the family.
Yes, yes.
My father was a chemist, educated in the field at Winterthur.
Mm-hmm.
There is a technicum with a section of chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And there he studied, and he had many friends, chemists too, and he saw them each year, and they all were very lucky to come together.
Oh yes. And what was your father's first name?
Jakob.
Jakob.
Jack.
Yes.
Yes.
And your mother? Was your mother related in any way with science, or was she
a housewife? No, not at all. My father married one of many sisters of a man in St. Gall who built windows. What is that?
Window?
Glass.
Window panes.
Yes,
yes,
yes. And then his wife died after the birth of the fourth child. And then he was with his four children in the age of 7 years to down to several days,
mm-hmm,
without a mother. And he married a sister of his died wife.
Of his dead wife.
Of his dead wife.
Yes.
And that was my mother.
Oh, and then he had more children.
Yes.
With the second wife.
The only child of the second
the
wife.
The only child?
The only child.
I see.
Of the second
I see. So you are the youngest of the
youngest
family.
Yes.
I see. And so you have many brothers and sisters, obviously. And did any of your brothers or sisters take up chemistry or anything scientific?
Was student of chemistry in Winterthur too.
Also?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then he was in Krefeld, where a special school for textile students mm-hmm. was to go more in the details of this field.
So you became a textile chemist?
A textile
and
chemist.
Then he was active in the firm,
yes,
in the company.
Yes. And I now see. He died 3 or 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and his 2 sons are running mm-hmm. the firm.
What was his first name?
Jakob.
Also?
Yes.
Also,
yes.
Yeah, and they called him Jack.
Yes.
So you grew up in a lively family, and you must have a number of memories, many memories from your early childhood. Your schooling, your elementary schooling was in Herisau?
That was in Herisau, and the family had a big rule. Each of my brothers had a hobby,
mm-hmm.
and they all were very nice to the smallest, and I saw how they did their work in the hobby. The oldest were keen in building electrical machines, motors and electrical circuits.
Mm-hmm.
The next brother, he is now still living, 89, was a gardener. He planted fruits and vegetables and bought it to his mother. As a man, he was able
he
to
sold
buy.
It.
He sold
it to his mother.
And
yes.
By the money, he bought new plants to grow them up.
Yes, see.
Later on, he was a man in
Can I help you?
Yes, thank you. In banking.
Oh, commerce.
Commerce, yes.
I see.
He
I
was
see.
Many years in India, in Rangoon,
mm-hmm.
and built up a big business.
But not connected with the textile firm.
No,
he did not
no.
build up a textile
And then the firm. Great disaster came in 28, and he lost all his money, and my father had to pay a good part of his own money to help
him. What was the Great Disaster?
The Great Depression.
Oh, the Great Depression in 1929. Yeah. Oh, I
yes.
see.
Yes.
I see. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And so
and
well.
The next son, my next brother,
mm-hmm.
was interested in collecting stamps.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw how each mm-hmm. one did very intensively mm-hmm. His work in the hobby.
It was a very stimulating environment, I would
yes,
say, for
yes.
you.
I saw so many different things.
Yes, yes.
And all
and got interested.
Was in my eyes in a very agreeable and friendly
and,
way.
And very pleasant.
Yes.
So you must have been a good student.
Yes.
In school, which was of course easy in elementary school.
At the gymnasium.
At the gymnasium, yes. That's we're going now to the secondary
yes.
school.
There were
Where was that?
Sengol.
Oh, in Sengol, not
that
in Herisau.
No. Even the canton of Appenzell
mm-hmm.
had at that time not this sort of school.
Mm-hmm.
So if one would prepare for studies at
mm-hmm.
University, one had from Herisau to go to Sengol.
Yes.
And in our class were 2 people, each one would be the first. One was myself,
mm-hmm.
and the other is the father of the Bundesrätin Elisabeth Kopp.
Oh, how interesting.
Yes. Max Ickley.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
We always looked to be at the top.
Uh-huh. You were competitive.
Yes.
That was healthy.
Yes.
Very good. And so you both went Sengol.
To Sengol.
So
yes.
You, what grade did you enter in Sengol? Did you go to the first class, first grade in gymnasium, or did you enter
the,
after secondary
I
school?
Was
or
6 years in
Herisau.
And then there is a secondary school.
Yes, yes.
And there I was 2 years.
Right.
And from this time I entered the first class of the technical division of the Kantonschule.
Oh, I see. Not the gymnasium.
You see, the yeah. technical division has the same classes as the gymnasium,
mm-hmm.
but no old language.
Yes, yes.
Instead of the old languages, we had very much mathematics,
mm-hmm.
then physics, chemistry,
mm-hmm.
and the principal natural sciences.
Yes.
Botany and geology,
mm-hmm.
and so on. So I had already in Sengol the possibility to develop my mind in the direction of natural science.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes on to my son, on to the son of my son.
Yes.
They don't like languages.
They don't like
with
languages.
So many irregular words and
yes.
words.
Well, and you, so you must have had chemistry
and
you liked
Sengol,
it
at Sengol. Just a new professor for chemistry,
mm-hmm.
just coming from the 9th division of the Swiss Federal School at Zurich.
Uh-huh.
That's the division of teachers in natural sciences.
Mm-hmm.
At that time it was the 10th division.
Yeah.
And this teacher in Sengol told me, don't go to the division of chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many students that you don't get a good contact with the professors.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the 9th or the
10th division. The natural
then
science division.
There are
division.
Two or
yes.
three students.
Yes.
And each has a very mm-hmm. good contact with the professors.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like this.
That was good advice.
And I had very fine professors.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of your professor in Sengol? Do you remember?
Enz?
Yes. I see.
He died 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah?
Yes.
So you went on to the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology.
Technology, yes.
And you entered the Division of Natural Sciences. That was in what year?
That was in 21.
21. So in between we had a world war. Did that affect you
yes,
in any way?
I was very impressed of this big war.
Mm-hmm.
And this impression goes on up to now. And I ask me a long time I'm living why it is not possible that human beings live friendly and peaceful on
mm-hmm.
this earth,
yes.
which grows smaller and smaller.
Yes, yes. Well, that was really a consequence of your witnessing this war at a very early age.
Yes, yes, yes.
So now let's go to the ETH, ETH,
yes,
or Swiss Federal Institute of Technology.
I was very lucky to have wonderful teachers. Staudinger, we come back to him.
Yes, indeed.
This
yes.
afternoon.
Yes.
And the physicist Scherer, he was Paul Scherer.
Paul Scherer?
Yes.
Oh, he was there already?
Yes, yes. He was a young professor at
yes.
that time
mm-hmm.
and was wonderful in the great number of experiments
mm-hmm.
he made in each lesson. That was a firework.
Yeah, he was an exciting teacher,
yes.
wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes. And then there was the old botanist Schröter. Very famous for the knowledge of plants of the Alps. He wrote a thick book, Die Pflanzen der Alpen.
Oh, yeah.
And he made excursions and I photographed, and I was his so-called co-photograph. If he saw a very nice plant anywhere, he called me, Signal, come and take a picture.
Did you develop your own pictures, or did you?
Yes, yes. I made them on glass, diapositives, and so I had a very nice collection. I have it no more, because now in my age I must look that not too many things which have only a relation to me or a relation to them are still there when I close my eyes. So it's not more than half a year. I let go with the old glasses
of
these fine pictures.
Well,
it was hard for my heart.
Well,
so
they...
I said, goodbye. Now a new generation is coming and they have their own interests.
Well, and now in at the ETH you had inorganic chemistry. Do you remember who taught it?
Yes, that was the son of the very famous Treadwell. Treadwell was one of the masters known in all the world for analytical chemistry.
He was English, was he?
Yes. And at that time when I was there, it was his son.
Yes.
The young Treadwell, which was very good in analytical chemistry, and he instructed in organic chemistry. Staudinger gave the first lecture of inorganic chemistry, not only of organic chemistry. In one term it was inorganic, and in the next term it was organic chemistry.
I see.
So you see, Staudinger had a broad view on chemistry as a whole.
Yes, he was very versatile.
Yes.
And
but there was not a very good relation between the scientific part of the Swiss Federal Institute and the technological part. Each part had the tendency to be more important than the other.
Was that engineering chemistry?
Engineering chemistry.
And who was there? Was it Fiertz?
Eduard Fiertz.
And Guir, was he there?
Guir came later.
Fiertz was quite famous for his dye chemistry.
Yes. He was a very strong personality.
Yes.
As well as Staudinger.
Yes. But
and it's very common that...
But you had no interest in going into dye chemistry, although you would have had some relationship to it through your textile background?
But I had not the idea to go back after my studies.
To join the firm?
To join firm, because there was my older brother.
I see.
Who was specially educated
yes,
to take
I
the
see.
Firm.
I see.
But there was a competition for good students between the good professors.
Yes.
So Nickley asked me whether I would come in his department as an assistant and take them mineralogy.
Yes.
But then it was the chemistry which had a higher weight for me.
For you.
For my ancestors.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you with who taught mineralogy, but you have answered my question. It was Nickley.
Paul Nickley.
Yes.
And his son is now professor of mineralogy at Bern University.
And from your work, studying part of your work, I have seen that you have quite an interest in mineralogy. So you must have concentrated quite a bit on this aspect during
the
your studies.
The lecture of Nickley was fascinating, and I was fascinated by this round groups, by this wonderful geometry,
symmetry,
mathematics of crystals. So when I got the Rockefeller stipendium, I chose as a place for 6 months,
you chose
Manchester, where the young Bragg was the chief of the institute. and he got the Nobel Prize in 25 or 26 years together with his father. Both got, if I am right in my memory, the Nobel Prize for applying the X-ray method to determine the structure of organic materials.
Yes, of crystals. So that was the younger Bragg.
Yes.
Well, now that was, we're jumping ahead a little bit. We are now 1921 to 1925 at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, and I would like to know a little more about your relationship with Staudinger. Your PhD work was done with Staudinger.
My thesis about the polymer formaldehyde at Zurich.
Yes.
And short afterwards, Staudinger was asked to be the main professor of chemistry in Freiburg. And then, having made half the thesis, I went with Staudinger to Freiburg.
I see.
And I finished the thesis there and had my examination at Zurich by professors.
I see. You got your degree from Zurich, but you did your doctoral work in Freiburg.
Freiburg, and my examiners were Richard Kuhn, the successor of Staudinger, and the co-referent was Fields.
I see.
They who took my oral examination.
Was that a difficult situation for you?
Oh, Staudinger said, you must nothing prepare. There are only questions in relation to your work. And so it was. So it was really easy.
So it wasn't.
Yes.
It wasn't difficult.
It was more a formality than examination.
Do you know why Staudinger preferred to go to Freiburg instead of staying at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology?
Yes. The reason was that the two parts, the industrial part and the scientific part, had not very good relations, as I
So it was a personality conflict?
It was a personality conflict, and in Freiburg he was the chief of the whole chemistry, so that was in accordance with his intention. He was a man very deep, very hardy, and with enormous energy.
Did you like him?
Oh,
you did?
I admired him.
You admired him?
And he did very much for me. And he was very content with me.
Yes.
My wife was not so very content with him. He had very much to do with the running of the institute all the morning.
Are we talking about Freiburg now?
Freiburg,
yes.
And then between 12 and half one, he finished that work, and then he came to my small, was a small part of the institute. Oh, Herr Signer, jetzt haben wir Zeit, jetzt wollen wir etwas über Wissenschaft diskutieren. And that went on until 2, half 3, 3, and at home my wife was waiting
with
and keeping the meal warm for
me. Yes.
And so I had very many, very fine discussions with Staudinger.
Did you talk a lot about polymer chemistry? I guess that was his main concern in those days.
Up and to, from time to time, he remembered the nice time he had in Switzerland.
Yes.
And then there was the great change in Germany, and Hitler came up, and then one had to walk all the institute, Staudinger and his assistants and the men of who cleaned all together had in the new idea of Hitler to walk to a big place where thousands of people were and had to attend the talk of the Führer. And then Staudinger said to me, it was a warm day, Walked on. Herr Signor, wir Türken, wir nehmen das als Sonnenbad.
We take this as a sun bath.
So, so, you see,
very,
she had a good humor.
Very good, yes. But that was only around 1930, and Hitler was already so strong, his influence was so strong then.
Strong. I left 35.
Yes.
And I had to leave Freiburg because my sons, Peter and the other boy was born at that time. They already stand at the street, and when there are many people walked along, they left arm to, and I'd hide Hitler, and then my wife and I said, no, now we have to go.
And so you were married at that time. What year did you get married?
That was 28.
In 28, I see.
Yes.
And that was still in Zurich?
That was in Freiburg.
Ah, it was in Freiburg,
yes. Change of place from Zurich to Freiburg, that was 27.
Yes.
26 or 27.
Was your wife German? Or?
No, no. I
or did you meet her before?
Know her during my studies in Zurich.
I see.
We were in the same class of learning dance, and then we found that we could make the life together. And we are now 58 years back.
You are. And what was her maiden name?
Margarete Meyer.
Margarete Meyer. From Zurich?
From Rüschlikon on the Zürich Sea.
Uh-huh. I see. I would like to know a little more about Staudinger, maybe about Staudinger at the ETH. Who else was there? Was Ruschitzka there?
Ruschitzka was there, but he had not a great position in the Institute. He was a hard-working man. He always had a green Gärtnerschütze with very big shaking Scheidetrichter.
Oh, yes, separatory funnels.
In his very small room where he worked with two or three of his doctorates. He was very active in making experiments himself.
Yes.
In the contrast to Staudinger, he had not the time to do experiments himself. But Staudinger had a great number of students working on the thesis, and that was very fine for me, because later on, when I came of the idea of streaming by refringence, I had so many different high polymer substances that I was in a very fine position to have, with so many materials, a good insight of the new method.
I see.
And Reifstein was not more at Zurich at that time.
No more, no longer, yes.
He had an enormous work together with Staudinger. Staudinger tried to get out the products who make the aroma of coffee. And he and Reichstein and many students worked in this field for years. But then it came out that by the Röstung des Kaffees, the high temperature, the molecules break down, and what makes the taste, that's a number of 10 or 20 different things. So it's absolutely impossible to make synthetic coffee.
Synthetic coffee aroma,
yes. That was the great work which Reichstein did under Staudinger's device.
I see. So now you went to Freiburg with Staudinger and you discussed his theories, and you must have been a part of the controversy. Staudinger his theories were attacked, and there must have been great concern on his side.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Yes. That is very interesting for my life, to see how intensively Staudinger was attacked when he came out with his idea of the great molecules. And several years later, every student or pupil of the secondary school knows already the nucleic acid, and it's very well to understand for him that there are big molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you that I had interest in philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I read, when I was 16 or 17, works of Kant and Staudinger.
Schopenhauer.
And in this introduction to Schopenhauer's main work, Die Welt als Wille und Vorstellung, he says, eine große Wahrheit kann nur ein kurzes Siegesfest feiern zwischen den langen Zeiträumen, in der sie als absurd verlacht und als trivial geringgeschätzt wird. Und das ist, was ich erlebt.
That this situation, Schopenhauer's ideas, that it relates to Staudinger's situation.
Yes, yes. It's only one thought, one idea of Schopenhauer. It's not his principal idea. He says it with respect of his own work. Nobody was reading his main work, Die Welt als Wille und Vorstellung.
Mm-hmm.
And der Verleger could not do something better than to einstampfen. All the, die ganze Auflage.
Oh, I
yes.
see. He had
yes.
to can it so
yes.
that he couldn't sell it.
He couldn't
but
sell it.
I can see that your philosophical background, your interest in philosophy comes through in your approach to science, which is something very valuable. There's a lot of depth in your approach to it.
When I heard that you would come, I read all my works, which I took out of the long series and said, they are perhaps of some value. And I had the idea in each work that it was very well founded.
Mm-hmm.
All I did, the sedimentation of macromolecules, the flow by refringens, it's in the publication very complete and very detailed expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perhaps what I learned from philosophy.
From philosophy.
Yes.
Now, in your work, we're gradually getting to your work,
yes,
but the
yes.
influence of Staudinger in the beginning is obviously very strong. And could you relate your beginnings, the beginning of your professional work with what you did for Staudinger? Your first publication was on polyoxymethylenes.
Yes, yes, yes. And that was a very fine work for me. I consider myself as, musst du mir sagen, was das ist.
Ah, your influence
it was
of
Staudinger
on
polyoxymethylene.
Yes.
There was the idea of all other scientists, these are particles with a great surface, and there is something adsorbed on the surface, so that the content of formaldehyde is not 100%, but less.
Mm-hmm.
And as smaller the particles, as greater the surface, and as greater the difference between the content of formaldehyde and 100%. And Staudinger had the idea these are long chains
mm-hmm.
of CH2, OCH2, and so on,
mm-hmm.
and at the end, H and OH, the parts of water. And then he said, if that is right, one should break these long chains in small pieces of different length. And he had the idea with acetic acid anhydride, he could break this long chain. And as shorter the parts were,
mm-hmm.
as fewer molecules of formaldehyde were between the two parts of acetic anhydride. And then he said to me, now you take a big quantity of the polymer formaldehyde, you heat it with the acetic anhydride in the Brunner tubes to 200 degrees, and then it breaks, and then what's coming out is like a slurry.
Mm-hmm. What kind of tubes, excuse me? What did you call them?
The tubes which you can in an oven after having sealed
yes,
the tube
I see, okay.
to heat to high
tubes,
temperature.
Yes.
And then what comes out is something which is not solid and not liquid, but is all together.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has dozens of different kinds of molecules. And then my problem was to separate this complex mixture
yes.
to real unique molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it as a pedant with great enthusiasm, and really I could isolate pure, sharp, melting substances with one, the next two, and so on, until 22 groups of CHO between the end groups of acetic anhydride.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wonderful thing was, at the same time, he worked together with a mineralogist, and he made X-ray pictures and could see the length of the molecule, because they, like the paraffins, form sheet lattices.
Mm-hmm.
You could measure the lengths of all types of molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in complete accordance with the number of CH2 groups I got out by chemical analysis. Mm-hmm. And so I am very proud to have given one of the most impressive points to Staudinger's idea by this separation mm-hmm. of this breaking down particles of the polymer formaldehyde.
So he must have been very pleased.
He was very pleased. And he helped me in all my life.
You published this work in Naturwissenschaft, and it was one of your earliest publications.
Yes, yes.
With Staudinger.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then you also habilitated
yes.
at the university. You started teaching.
Yes, yes.
What was your position then?
Staudinger was very pleased that I came on the idea of flow bireferentials.
Mm-hmm.
And his teacher, Vorländer, was the physical chemist with whom Staudinger studied. he made the flow by refringence of low molecular weight materials as stearic acid, palmitic acid in solution or in molten,
or liquid.
And he saw that as longer the molecules, as stronger the flow by reference. And then I said, Staudinger, if you are right, all your polystyrenes and the cellulose derivatives and all should show streaming by refringence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I built an apparatus to measure that, and it was a second new proof of Staudinger's idea. And I was so lucky to have so many different materials for this investigation of flow by refringence, mm-hmm. because Staudinger had 10 or 15 students each working on another sort of material, and I could get from all this work the material, and then this streaming by refringence apparatus in a very short time show a wonderful accordance with Staudinger's view. And then if other young people had the idea to habilitate, said, you must make like Sigmar, you must make him something new with the Markov molecules. So he was very pleased about my
work. Your work and yes. your support yes. of his theories.
And for that, he was looking for the Rockefeller Fellowship for me.
I see, that's how you got it.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. because he was then, that was 32, 33, the fight, that was already in the period where the idea of macromolecules had good roots,
mm-hmm.
and all people not too close in the mind saw then that Staudinger was right.
Mm-hmm.
And in this connection, I will tell you about a discussion after a great lecture which Staudinger gave in Düsseldorf before the Gesellschaft Deutscher Naturforschung und Ärzte. They meet each year once, and one of the great scientists is called to give the main lecture. And though Staudinger, very enthusiastic, told of his idea of the great molecules. And then the old Willstätter was present and said, I am not absolutely convinced now that this idea of Staudinger is right. But if he is right, he opens to the organic chemistry a field which is much bigger than all the organic chemistry. No.
That's great. So
yes.
Willstätter said that?
Yes, yes, yes. And in a time where most of the chemists were against this idea of chemistry.
Yeah, that was a lot of support
yes,
for his,
yes.
at least he opened the door to
yes.
acceptance
yes.
of Staudinger's theories.
Yes.
What, do you remember what year that was approximately? In the early 30s?
That was between, let us say, 30 and 33.
Yes.
I cannot say
yes.
directly the
yes.
year, but it was in this period when I was not very long in Freiburg.
Mm-hmm. Because in 1933 you went to Uppsala
yes.
on
yes.
your Rockefeller Fellowship.
Yes, yes. Yes.
And wasn't Staudinger reluctant to let you go?
No, he knew that that was only for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I would like that you come back to Freiburg after this
which you did.
Which I did, yes.
So could you tell us a little bit about your work with T. Swedberg, which was of great influence on your own development?
It was a wonderful time. There existed only one ultracentrifuge in the world. That was Swedberg's in Uppsala. And there you met, when you came, people from all the world coming with special proteins to let them sediment in the ultracentrifuge to determine the molecular weight. So we had people from the States, from London, from everywhere. And this ultracentrifuge was used so intensively that at the beginning of the week, one of his assistants made the plan. Monday between 0 and 4 in the morning, that's for Victor McFarlane, from 4 to 8, the centrifuge is 3 for 6.
Yes.
And so all the over the week.
They had to take turns.
Yes.
Did Linus Pauling come over with some proteins?
No.
That was the time he worked on.
Came later.
Yes.
Swedberg with ultracentrifuge was perhaps a little bit in the time before. Yes.
I see. So he got the Nobel Prize in 1926, so he already was very famous when
he studied with him. He got the Nobel Prize as a young man. I don't know exactly how old he was, but I don't think he was 30.
Now, much of your work really centers on determining molecular weights of high polymers, and this is where you use the ultracentrifuge.
Yes, and the work in Uppsala was very hard, because when we came with our substances only soluble in organic solvents, the ultracentrifuge could not be used, because it was constructed for aqueous solutions.
I see. Why was that? Why was it difficult on an order of volatility?
The cell in which the solution is placed is on both sides closed by quartz windows.
I see.
And you measure the sedimentation velocity during the rotation of the rotor 3,000 times a second by getting through with ultraviolet light through the quartz windows.
Yes.
But between the quartz windows and the middle part, in which in one section was the solution, was a very thin sheet of Indian rubber.
I see. And so that was attacked by organic solvents.
So I came to Uppsala to construct a film which was insoluble in organic solvents, but had the mechanical properties of a thin sheet of Indian rubber. And for that, I could come back to the knowledge of Staudinger. I made a very thin film of polyacrylic acid with a plastifier of glycerin, and I made it in a big schale,
in a
dish over mercury, by evaporating an aqueous solution of these two components. And then there were, on the mercury, at the end, a wonderful equi-thick film of this new material, polyacrylic acid, plastified to wish degree with glycerin, mm-hmm. and then they were made the small sheet which was put between the quartz window and the middle part, and that took 4 months until we could make the first measurements with our substances.
Oh, and you only had 6 months.
And
so
in 2 months we worked day and night.
I imagine
all the details uh-huh. which in 3 publications are to be seen now.
On the birefringence. No,
that's about the sedimentation.
Oh, the sedimentation,
works over sedimentation of the macromolecules.
Right.
And Schwedberg was very pleased, and he said to me, no one of the many people who came to this place to use the ultracentrifuge were so quickly acquainted with all the details. I think I keep you here. Come to Uppsala and work with us for all your life.
And you didn't? You didn't want to?
I preferred to go back to studying, because one knew that in Sweden it was very difficult for a non-Swedish man to come in higher positions.
Yes,
they
I
had
see.
A very good practice to look for their own people.
I see.
And Stodinger said me before, come back to Freiburg.
Uh-huh.
So it was clear that I came back to Freiburg. And there I had the idea of the string by refringence, and then Stodinger said, that's the way how people who should get the Vineyard Lucendi must work. They must open something new, as Signer has made it.
Yes, that was a really demanding precedent.
Yes.
But then you went to Manchester first,
yes,
before
yes.
you got back to Freiburg.
Yes, yes.
And you stayed 6 months in Manchester with Prague.
And there was one publication. Have you seen it? Quite another field. And I had my idea what I would do with Prague.
Mm-hmm.
But then the professor of physical chemistry in Freiburg, Hevesi, a very well-known man, Nobel Prize man, said, if you go to another place, don't come with your ideas. Go and see what is done there and what you can learn there. And so it was clear for me that when I come to Manchester, I would see what Bragg would propose to me to make.
Mm-hmm.
And then just at that time, a very important work of one of his students was finished about the heteropolyacids. And then Bragg said, there are other heteropolyacids, and you could in this half year see whether they have an analogous structure. And perhaps I can point out quickly the publication and show you what came out. And there is in Manchester I had the chance to work in the field of heteropolyacids. A student of Professor Bragg had just evaluated the constitution of this very complicated inorganic substances. And then we could see by Debye-Sherrill diagrams that other heteropolyacids had just the same structure.
Mm-hmm.
And here you see how the different heteropolyacids gave the Debye-Sherrill diagrams with practically exactly the same lines at the same points with the same intensity. Though in a very short time of several months, we could see that all these heteropoly acids have an analogous, very complicated structure. So
this had an effect on your later approach when you also worked with X-ray analysis?
No, that was the own work in this field.
That has no bearing on the molecular structure of macromolecules?
No.
Because I noticed that you have...
We were interested in the arrangement of molecules, chain molecules in solids.
In solids, yes.
And
yes,
that comes in another publication, which I, perhaps that is still the Rockefeller deal.
Yes, let's talk about Bragg, if you have, do you remember something interesting you could tell us?
That was very impressive. He was a Nobel Prize man, famous all over the world.
Are we talking about the younger Bragg?
The younger Bragg,
yes.
And when I came to his office, it was as he would greet a very old friend. Such a friendly atmosphere, by such a important and all over the world well-known man, that was a very great impression. And the whole time when we were there, my wife and I, we always had this idea with this English people, you are like old friends.
And that's where you learned your excellent English. Yes. Was Crick there? Or was he yet?
That was later.
I know Crick and Watson worked with Bragg later, I wondered if he was there already, he was too young then.
Yes. He came in the field of being seen when they, Watson and Crick, evaluated the double helix.
But I thought maybe he was a student there.
Once was a colloquium of the Solvay Congress in Brussels, and I was invited. And then Bragg greeted me and said, oh, the double helix was evaluated by the material you have isolated in Bern.
Wonderful. Yes. Your thymonucleic acid?
Yes. I come back
we'll talk about that later. So that was later. When was the Solvay Congress you're talking about?
Was perhaps about 40.
I see.
And when I came to Bern, 2 years after my work, after I started my work in Bern, came a Swedish colleague, Kasparsson, and said his master, Hammarsten in Stockholm, had the idea that the molecular weight of the nucleic acid which Hammarsten and Kasparsson prepared could best be found out by flow-by reference. And in half a day,
amazing,
Kasparsson and I knew the molecular weight, and the next day we wrote a small publication which is in
That's not the molecular shape and size of dimonucleic acid, or it's Signer, Caspersen,
yes,
and Hammerstein in 1938.
Yes, that's number 27.
We have it. It was published in Nature.
That's it, yes.
Yes, thank you. Yes, see that. Not from polystyrene. I think we're talking about the molecular shape and size of dimonucleic in Nature.
Yes,
in 1938. So you consider this your most important publication?
Yes. From this time on, I saw that nucleic acid was one of the biological most important molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And then I let make two dissertations to improve the preparation of nucleic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 years later, there was a symposium in London organized by the SIBA company in Basel.
Mm-hmm.
And I told about improvements of the preparation of nucleic acid.
Mm-hmm.
But not only I told about, I brought a bottle of this size of finely preparated nucleic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it to the director of the symposium, Dr. Butler, and he distributed the nucleic acid to different institutions. Mm-hmm. One part came to Cambridge, Doughty, who measured the light scattering, and one part came to Cambridge, where Watson and Crick, with a Bernese nucleic acid, evaluated the double
helix. Oh, I see. Well, that's wonderful.
Yes.
A wonderful aspect of your career.
And then I was, as I heard later, proposed for the Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not enough.
Oh. I see. But you were nominated for
I heard that I was nominated. I don't know for which side. Staudinger, when he came to Bern, he always was interested in what I am doing. And he, to other pupils, said, Signer in Bern, he always makes new and other things. And that's my great fault. If I would have made only in one direction, it would have made perhaps more impression. And now I would show you the publication in which is seen how much we, by two theses, improved the isolation of native nucleic acid. The birefringence of this dimonucleic acid prepared in Stockholm
mm-hmm.
by Hammerstein and Caspersen, I saw that this nucleic acid was one of the most important biological substances. And then I tried to isolate it from calf's thymus
mm-hmm.
because there is a high concentration of dimonucleic acid, as native as possible without degradation. And in Knopp's dissertation we came one step further.
So he was a student of yours?
Yes,
and he made his thesis.
And then another student, Schwander, continued the work mm-hmm. of Knapp. Mm-hmm.
And the result was this. That's the viscosity of the material which came from Stockholm. Kasparsson and Hammersteins, from which we always knew by flow, by refringence, that it was high molecular.
Yes.
And this work of Knapp and Schwander gave a material with a much higher viscosity, that means with much more native molecules. And then came this symposium in London, and I took to London a bottle with 15 grams of this material. And this material was distributed by the man who arranged this colloquium, that was a Dr. Butler, and he sent one part to Cambridge, where Watson and Crick found out the double helix so with the material of Brown.
You really had, you played a role, actually, in a way, in the double helix structure.
Yes, yes.
But in,
there,
in
one... There is an English botanist who came to Bern and asked me all these details. And he wrote an article, I don't know in which Zeitschrift it came out, with a title Before the Double Helix. And in this you find all that I explained just now. That in Bern it was a long work to prepare the nucleic acid without degrading the molecules.
You also had some interesting speculation there about the arrangement of the purines and pyrimidines.
Yes, yes. That was...
That's the same communication. No, it was in a communication in Nature, in the...
Already
in English, there was a communication on the molecular shape and size of diamond nucleic acid.
In this first publication.
And you...
You have already... given the idea that the purine and pyrimidine rings must lie perpendicular to the long axis of the molecule, because it was the whole double refraction was negative double refraction. That means the main polarizability of the arrangement of atoms lies perpendicular to the length of the molecule.
I think we should go back. We have jumped ahead a little bit because you were in Cambridge and now you went back to Freiburg and then you went to Bern. So
yes,
could you tell me about that period when you started in Bern or after,
when
you were ready to leave Freiburg?
I told already that the sons determined, or it was the behavior of the sons which made the family signal going out
of Germany. I see. And now you were married and you had how many children?
To Peter and the next younger Dieter.
At the time, Freiburg.
In Freiburg, yes.
And then you
and
did
then
not
I,
like what happened there.
And then we decided to go out of Germany.
Yes.
And I went to the director of Ziba, Dr. Engel, and asked whether they have a position for me. And he said, certainly. And I had already the contract with the Ziba, and we found a house in Rien, and then we moved with our material to Rien, and then there came a telephone from Bern from the professor of inorganic chemistry, Kohlschütter. He was a friend of Staudinger, and Kohlschütter told me, you must come to Bern, you are proposed as the professor of organic chemistry, and the people of the government would like to make your knowledge. And then I came to Bern, and after a short time it was decided that I could take this position, and then I had to go to Basel to the CIBA and said, I don't come.
Yes.
And Staudinger said, that was very nice. If you will go in a car, you must go to Basel. But if it doesn't make you trouble to go by foot, then you go to Bern.
I see. In other words, the
in other words, you
compensation
could, you
would have been bigger.
Be the
yes.
A healthy man in
wealthy,
Basel,
yes.
And you must go with a small salary
as a professor.
As a professor.
And you chose.
And then my wife said, there is no doubt you are not the man for the big industry. And then I decided, after the good advice of my wife.
And
I was very lucky.
You have not regretted it, have
never,
you?
No,
never.
I very enthusiastically introduced all students for medicine in organic chemistry. They had, in the first two terms, mm-hmm. inorganic chemistry, organic chemistry, botany and zoology. Mm-hmm. And I very often, if I now come to any place, maybe Chur with one of my blessed sons at 11 or 12 at night, and then came the doctor and said, oh, I know you. You are my teacher of organic chemistry.
My teacher and my guest, probably.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's wonderful. And you then started as an associate professor, and very soon you became a full professor.
Yes.
About two
first
years.
Of the whole institution, uh-huh. inorganic and organic together, uh-huh. and with time the inorganic developed, and we decided that it should be institution each with a director. Mm-hmm.
So you succeeded Fritz Ephraim,
yes,
as a
yes.
professor of organic chemistry,
yes.
in 1937?
33. I started.
Yes, I mean as a full professor. Okay, yes. You started in 33?
In 33, yes.
And maybe in 35. In 33 you were
yeah,
at Cambridge.
35.
And you went back to Freiburg, and then
yes,
35. And
I came to Bern.
And in 37 you became a full professor and
yes, yes.
In 39 you became the director of the Chemical Institute.
Yes, yes.
And chairman of organic chemistry. And the institute was then split, you say, into organic and inorganic, during
yes.
the war.
Yes, yes.
And how did the war affect the institute or your work? Did it have any bearing or any effect?
I was a soldier of the Swiss Army.
I see.
And I had to go 2 months as a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Urlaub for 1 month, and then I came to the institute and looked what problems
had piled up.
And after several periods of military service, I got a heart attack because it was too much to do the military service,
yeah.
And then in 1 month go to the institute and
yes.
see what happens there. And then came our doctor and said, now you have a nice house and a garden, now you don't go for a half year to the institute and you look to cure your heart. And I had no more difficulties with...
Since then?
Yes.
And you had no more military service, I'm sure you were discharged then.
So that was the only effect of World War II, that it was too much work.
Yes, but no other problems like a shortage of materials or anything that would have a direct bearing on...
No.
Your
things went
work.
On in the institute normally. Very few students, because most of them had to do military service.
Yeah.
So there was not so much work.
It was a very disruptive period, because the students also had to go and interrupt their work.
Yes.
It has been very difficult. Well, I think we could talk a little more about your work. You worked basically... the compounds you worked on were polystyrenes, cellulose derivatives, proteins, and later again polyoxymethylenes. So what could we discuss here?
There are different things which I have not in the list of the heavier works. I worked out a method of separating molecules by different diffusion coefficients. And that was an intensive work over 10 years. And the man who could best see what work was done was Harald Jury from the States.
Oh, yes, I see.
He came to Switzerland, visit different universities, and I show him my apparatus for separating organic molecules by different diffusion coefficients. Then he was very interested and told me about his work. He developed the method of separating the uranium hexafluorides for the atomic bomb.
I see.
And he said this was the greatest industrial complex which ever existed in the United States at the time, because it needs an enormous number of membranes to separate this uranium hexafluorides, where only the uranium atoms differed less than 1% in the molecular weight.
Yes, indeed.
And he was extremely interested to see that a small man in a small university in a small country in Switzerland took up the same problem of separating molecules of different molecular weights by diffusion.
So you have been quite seminal in many fields. Developments.
Staudinger immer said, Signer macht immer wieder etwas Neues. If something was...
Signer always does something new. To go back to flow birefringence, you developed an apparatus?
Yes, that was nothing new, because Forlander had done this in 1925 for low molecular weight materials as paraffins or acids like palmitic and stearic acid. And when I saw this publication, then I said to myself and to Staudinger, you chain molecules must give a very intensive flow birefringence. And then we measured these different substances with different molecular weights and got very nice out all the rules which govern the influence of concentration of the dissolved material, of constitution of the chain molecules, of molecular weight, and all that is in the first publication to be found.
Yes, yes. That was the one with Signer and Gross.
Yes, yes.
Actually, there are a great number of papers on high polymers. It's a whole series. This was the 83rd paper on macromolecules, as far as I can see from... But that was back in 1933. That's still
then
from your Freiburg days.
It was in the...
It was a whole series. Yes, right.
This
relates to the Staudinger
yes,
papers.
Yes.
And
yes.
You published with Gross, and you published in the...
Helvetica
in Helvetica, and it was Neuerer's Zeitschrift für Physikalische Chemie,
yes,
the 83rd.
Yes, yes.
And then we have the 87th paper then in... Was that in the same series? That was on the sedimentation rate. That was in Helvetica, but that was a paper originating from your Uppsala.
87.
So we're talking about a whole series of papers. Then we have a 91st paper. That then deals with, again, with the ultracentrifuge. And then we come, then you started concentrating on thymonucleic acids in 1938.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then you, from 1938 to 1948, you worked mainly on thymonucleic acids?
With these two collaborators.
Yes.
Knapp and Schwander.
Uh-huh. Right. Right.
And this was the material for the colloquium in London, where I brought the material
right.
Which gave the double helix
right.
By X-ray.
And then you started, your interests kind of shifted somewhat to proteins. And mainly casein, and that we're jumping ahead a little bit now. That's in 1960.
Yes.
You
yes.
Published some papers on proteins and casein.
Yes, yes.
And
that is a big field. The influence of electrolytes like sodium chlorides to the water sorption of proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, the basic idea was 85 or 90% of myself is water.
Mm-hmm.
So the relation of water to all my molecules must be very important. Another fact. If Gandhi started a hunger strike, he drank each day practically normally his tea.
Mm-hmm.
That means even if one will die by a hunger strike and does not more eat, one drinks a very long time,
mm-hmm.
Showing that the solvent of all effects in the body
mm-hmm.
is very important. And then I said, let us investigate the influence of different things, of the water absorption of proteins. And then I had luck again, a young man from Hungary, which flew Hungary by political reasons.
He emigrated from Hungary
to Bern. And was angestellt.
He was employed.
Employed by a firm which is in Gümligen. And the chef of this firm was a Studienkollege of mine.
A colleague, yes.
Some years older. He is also a big friend of Reichstein.
What's his name?
Lüscher. Gottlieb Lüscher. And when I was in Bern, he came to me and said, I have the idea that it is very useful for an industrial factory to have good contact with the university. Therefore, I work together with Reichstein, which is in my age, and I would like to work together with you. And the way we do it is that you can do what you like, and what it costs, that will be paid by us.
I see.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. And if there is something which brings money by a patent, then this firm, of which I am the director, will take over the patent.
The patent.
And the patent,
yes.
And what is coming out. And so I had no difficulties with money.
So you always got the funding from them.
I always could say I would like to investigate this and that, and I could do what I liked.
And did anything come out of it in a practical way on
no.
polymers?
No, no. Only this Hungarian man is now one of the directors of the firm.
Yes.
And he worked in this field, influence of electrolytes on proteins on the water absorption and the drying of different materials, coffee and cabbage and what it is, that's one of the problems of this firm. So the whole thing I could do for the firm was to work with this young Hungarian man. He saw many things which were useful for the firm, and he is now one of the directors.
I see. But then you did work on casein. That was one of your main fields also. But have you ever, were you ever interested in developing fibers for commercial purposes?
From this direction, from this company, came the question, would you not try to make a protein fiber?
Yes.
And then I said, why not? And we developed a dry spinning procedure. The normal preparation of viscose is that the solution of cellulose derivatives is put by a fine hole in a non-solvent and then yes, and in Italy there was the Lanital, which was also a wet spinning method. And we tried to develop a dry spinning method where a very concentrated casein water mixer was pulled out up in a long channel and high on warm air was streaming against it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end you could wind up dry spun fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And that came to a production of 20 to 30 kilo a year.
Mm-hmm.
And several people had already this dry spun fiber clothing.
Well, I heard that you came to your lectures with a suit or some pants or something spun of that casein, and your students really got a great kick out of that.
Yes, and I had a very nice contact with a man of United States who was the most important man in the new fiber. That was Dr. Charge of the DuPont Company.
Yeah, I see.
And I gave a lecture of the body comfort of fibers.
In America?
That was anywhere in Europe. I think it was Strasbourg.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I made a small publication about the water transport in fiber packings.
Mm-hmm.
And there I could show that silk and wool and our casein fiber had a very low transport of humidity through a packing of fibers.
Mm-hmm.
And all material which you feel cold,
mm-hmm.
they had a much quicker transport of water.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. And then Dr. Charge said, what we do in the United States about body comfort of fibers with very, very complicated apparatus, you do with a test tube.
Wonderful.
Yes.
And the casein fiber was it like wool?
Yes, in
it
the
felt,
feeling.
Yes.
But if it was wet,
mm-hmm.
then the texture, the tensile strengths,
mm-hmm.
The reisfestigkeit,
yeah, that's fine.
Was very low.
Oh, I see. So it never developed.
It never developed to a useful fiber.
It was not
fiber.
Successful.
Yes. We hoped by dry spinning, the packing of the molecules would be denser than by wet spinning.
Yes.
And we combined it with the hope that the strength could be higher.
Mm-hmm.
The only positive thing was that it was in the keeping warm. It was like wool or silk and much better than the cotton, the artificial
viscose
or
any of the cellulose fibers.
Yes, and there are several patents in this field, how to prepare the casein to be able to make the dry spinning process.
That you had, yes. You have a number of patents anyway.
And this apparatus for separating molecules by diffusion, that gave a patent too.
That was patented.
But then I saw that the diffusion coefficient goes with the third root of the molecular weight.
Mm-hmm.
So you need enormous difference in molecular weights to have enough difference
in diffusion.
Diffusion, yes.
I see.
And from that moment I looked for other methods of separating materials.
Mm-hmm.
And there are Staudinger, Woodwitters, and come. Once more, say signum maritim or something new. An apparatus for separating molecules by countercurrent distribution.
Oh, yes, see, yes. Yes.
And there is another thing I would like to show you, because it goes on by a professor of chemistry in Basel, which is the successor of Reichstein.
What's his name?
Brenner.
Yes.
And he works now with this principle, which I just would like to explain you. I only need the number, and for that
here.
I need the letter of my son, in which all the numbers are. Ich hoffe, in der Zeit finde ich auch wieder das Briefchen von Peter mit den Nummern.
Ich habe eine Kopie. Hier.
In our country, in Switzerland.
Now we're talking about the lecture that you gave before the French Chemical Society,
yes, yeah,
in 1949.
L'arrangement des macromolécules dans les solides.
Arrangement of,
yes,
macromolécules,
yes,
in,
yes,
solids.
Yes.
And it was published in a bulletin of the Société Chimique.
Bulletin de la Société,
yeah, Chimique.
Chimique.
De France.
Yeah.
Now, would you like to talk about,
yes,
this for a while?
Because we were very interested in using the electron microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, I was asked by a Swiss firm working in textiles whether one could, by the electron microscope, see something about the structure of fibers. And we specialized in the reprint of the surface of solids. Solids, especially fibers.
Yes.
And then what came out looks like this.
Now we have some beautiful photographs,
yes,
here.
Yes. That's cellulose,
mm-hmm,
with a strenge of macromolecules,
mm-hmm,
and that's wool with this very interesting surface.
Mm-hmm. So there's a difference here between the cellulose and wool.
Wool, yes.
And what causes this difference? Is it in the cross-linking or?
No, with the cellulose it's clear.
Yeah.
There is a motion of the material inside the cell in which the macromolecules are dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a spiral-like arrangements.
Spiral-like, yes,
arrangements,
yes,
which is to be seen.
Mm-hmm. You're always talking about these regions of crystallized material,
yes,
which you called crystallites.
Yes, yeah.
And that's why you can actually,
yes, and
use
then,
the method.
Yes. There was an old observation that acetylated cellulose.
Mm-hmm.
Different products gave a flow birefringence like this.
Mm-hmm.
That means at low flow gradients,
mm-hmm,
one had already a very big birefringence, which only very small increase by increasing flow velocity.
Yes, we're talking then, about figure 2 here in yes, the publication.
And my idea was that to produce such a big birefringence mm-hmm. by small flowing rites, mm-hmm. there must be big particles, micelles of the cellulose, mm-hmm. which are not dissolved in molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And into molecules. Other acetyl celluloses gave this normal increase mm-hmm. of the streaming birefriction mm-hmm. with the gradient.
Mm-hmm.
And then by electron microscopy,
yes.
one saw that this material gave a picture like this,
mm-hmm. like where you see on the right side.
Yes,
here.
And this one,
that's
where the molecules are dissolved, gave in the same concentration, in the same manner of preparation, such a film without these big particles.
Figure 3.
Though it was a very good proof that our idea, by refringence, there must be big molecules which orientate easily,
mm-hmm.
that is right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say about electron microscopy, which was a work over years,
mm-hmm.
until we had the method which was sufficient to be used.
So in other words, the cellulose is organized in domains.
Yes.
You call
yes.
them domains.
Yes, yes.
And then you can see the structure.
Yes. And now the work over the counter-current distribution.
Mm-hmm. Is that the Decema publication,
yes,
the
yes.
laboratory apparatus,
yes.
which you developed.
Which
you
developed
a
yes.
new apparatus.
Yes, and this apparatus is now applied by Dr. Brenner.
Mm-hmm.
He was earlier interested in the synthesis of peptides,
mm-hmm.
and he told me, it's 2 months ago, he visited me and said that he works in this field which I created now with high intensity. They come together each year, once in Europe, once in the States, all the people interested in peptides and proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And he works now with this apparatus. Well, two.
That's on page 5, that's figure 2 on
yes.
page 5.
Yes. Well, 2 currents
mm-hmm.
flow one against the other.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that is, it comes in here and goes out here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lighter fluid which goes
on
in
top.
This direction.
Yes.
And you can introduce by this tube at any place
number
of
11.
The whole
yes,
apparatus
mm-hmm.
the mixture. And mm-hmm. he says now his apparatus, according this principle,
yes.
is able to separate the mixture of many proteins
mm-hmm.
because part of the proteins more soluble in one solvent
mm-hmm.
goes in one direction
mm-hmm.
and the other in the other direction
mm-hmm.
and you can choose the velocities of the 2 solvents so that the wanted protein stays in the middle. It spreads very not very quickly,
slowly
mm-hmm. it spreads over mm-hmm. the apparatus
mm-hmm.
and all other proteins are already out of the apparatus.
You can actually separate one out of a mixture of
one
many?
One out of the mixture,
uh-huh.
yes.
And it's
not
used
an enormous quantity,
no,
only the quantity which at the end
mm-hmm.
fills the whole apparatus.
Mm-hmm.
But he has the idea that's a very important method
apparatus.
to separate one protein which does only differ a little bit from the others.
Yes. Do they call it the Signer apparatus?
I asked him.
Yes.
And he said no. It,
they don't?
He will do
it's
it.
Not fair. He will call it the Signer apparatus.
Yes. And now?
That was in 1956, that publication. And we, maybe you want to talk about esterification of cellulose and the separation
That's
principles. But that was really...
Which number is it?
Monatshefte für Chemie in 1950.
Ah, yes. That's what I showed you by...
The electron microscope, yes.
Where one has in one preparation only the molecules, mm-hmm. and in the other the molecules
with
a small quantity of bigger particles.
I see. So this is an application of the...
Of electron microscopy and streaming by refringes.
Right.
And well, then one of the newest is the here is another. Staudinger was right. Mm-hmm. I do always new things.
Yes, yes.
Polystyrenes can dissolve in some solvents with a high viscosity and in other solvents with a low viscosity, mm-hmm. the same material. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that in the solvents in which the viscosity is high, the solvent penetrates in these clouds of molecules very intensively.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other solvents, it's just able to dissolve, but the molecules are close to, knoil?
Clusters?
Clusters, yes, yes.
Or tangled up?
Yes, and then I had the idea that these two types of solvent should have quite different thermodynamical interactions with the small fragments of the molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And we took as an example ethyl benzol, mm-hmm. which is the smallest part of polystyrene,
mm-hmm.
and a good solvent which dissolves the polystyrene with a high viscosity is toluol,
mm-hmm.
which is very
toluene
chemically related with a ethyl benzol,
mm-hmm.
and a bad solvent which makes low viscosity is methyl ethyl ketol.
Mm-hmm.
And then I give to my colleague Arm the idea that he should exact thermodynamical investigation of mixtures from ethyl benzol with toluol as a good solvent and methyl ethyl ketone as a bad solvent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what he measured. Mixing heats, then vapor pressures over the whole range of composition, and the result is here.
Mm-hmm. That is, now we're talking about a publication on thermodynamic measurements
on
mixtures of ethyl benzene and toluene
and
methyl ethyl ketone, and it's published in Helvetica Chemica Acta in 57, and it's dedicated to Professor Reichstein on his 60th birthday.
That's possible.
That's what it says, yes.
And Herr Professor Reichstein,
right,
zum 60. Geburtstag,
right,
gewesen.
And you want to talk about this last,
yes, you see,
face diagram?
These mixtures, mm-hmm, from 0 to 100%, mm-hmm, gives very extreme effects.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you have the delta G.
Delta
here.
G,
yes.
And in the
enthalpy.
T enthalpy, yes.
Yeah.
And the same diagram, mm-hmm, for the other combination, mm-hmm, of ethyl benzol with toluol, mm-hmm, that is said in one sentence, mm-hmm, would give all three quantities very near the zero line.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that ethyl benzene has very different behavior with toluene, which would give these three things horizontally, and methyl ethyl ketone.
Uh-huh.
So that the difference of the viscosity of, mm-hmm, polystyrene, mm-hmm, in these two solvents,
yes,
goes for a part back to the thermodynamic interactions of the small fragments with the two different solvents.
I see. Well, that's very interesting.
And then which year is that? Very short for
1957.
Yes, and I retired.
Yes, 1957, and you retired.
Retired 1972. Something like this. Yes,
I think.
So that was made in my last, and one of my colleagues' arm goes, mm-hmm, on in this direction.
In this direction. So actually we have now reached the point where we can talk about your retirement.
Yes, yes.
From the university.
Yes. Yes.
In 1972. And
there is only one thing.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about
this colleague coming from Hungria,
mm-hmm,
which is now director of the Harko Gesellschaft.
Yeah. What was his name?
His name is Gahl, Stefan Gahl.
Gahl, yes.
And the number of the publication is 209.
Mm-hmm. And what was the name? Oh yes, well that's what we talked about earlier in the,
yes,
casein.
Yes, yes.
The casein story and effect of sodium.
That's right, yes.
And
here you have the
chlorine
picture.
Ions.
That's the water vapor sorption.
Mm-hmm.
Of pure casein,
mm-hmm,
and of casein with mixtures of sodium chloride,
mm-hmm,
then you see up to a certain great quantity of sodium chloride,
mm-hmm,
the water vapor sorption increases very strong,
yeah,
and then there is no further increase.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very simple to explain. The casein, like a liquid, is able to dissolve a certain quantity of sodium chloride.
Mm-hmm.
And when this quantity is reached,
mm-hmm,
and you have a mixture with more sodium chloride,
mm-hmm,
then the sodium chloride is crystalline in the material and has no sorption, water sorption power.
Uh-huh. I see. And the name of the publication is the bonding of sodium and chlorine ions,
yes,
by,
yes,
casein, and it's from macromolecular chemistry, and the publication is dated from 1961. Could we talk a little bit about your retirement now?
Yes.
After we have talked extensively about your work, and yes, we're going to 1972.
Yes.
When you gave up your position in Bern.
It was.
At age, how old are you then?
At that time.
You were older than 65.
Retire evil as his will,
uh-huh,
between 65 and 70.
Oh, I see.
And
I
now
see.
There is a new law in,
yes,
Bern,
uh-huh,
that one has to retire with 65.
Oh, I see.
And the faculty had to replace in the last weeks,
mm-hmm,
all professors between 65 and 70.
All at once?
All at once. And they had an enormous work.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. The succeeders.
Yes, yes, that was not a very, very well thought out,
yes,
idea.
But I was 69 and a half when,
uh-huh,
I gave the last lectures.
Oh.
And I did it over 37 years,
uh-huh,
each year with the same enthusiasm.
And your students must have given you a great round of applause after,
oh, yes,
your,
yes,
last,
yes,
lecture.
Yes, yes, yes.
And was it difficult to retire, or was it easy?
What?
Was it difficult to retire?
Oh, not at all.
Not at all.
Because I had, long before, the big garden.
Yes.
And I had not the time to do,
uh-huh,
the most dringliche,
yeah, the urgent
work.
And
when I retired, I had the idea I would do some chemical work in one or the other direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then I had so much to see and to do and,
mm-hmm,
to enjoy in the garden that I really left the institution at,
uh-huh,
once.
That's good. And
yes,
so you had your big hobby was gardening.
That's it, yes, yes. And then I had the idea when I came to Bern, nobody gave me direction how I should instruct the students. And so I think all my younger colleagues working now, they are happy when they can do things as they want.
Yes.
Without seeing, mm-hmm, that the old man has a kind of different ideas.
Yes.
They changed the plans of instruction
yes,
very much.
They changed the structure.
I think it was good to,
uh-huh,
change
the curriculum,
but
yeah,
for my time I still have the, mm-hmm, idea it was done not so bad.
For your time. And of course, when you were there, polymer chemistry dominated,
yes,
organic,
yes,
chemistry.
Yes, yes.
And I read that after you left, it was synthetic organic chemistry.
Yes, that's right.
Which, again, it was the time for it, wasn't,
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
It's time.
I did not follow during my time all this development of reaction mechanism.
Yes.
And I think my students, mm-hmm, got not enough of these ideas.
Oh, is that what
but
you
they
think
got,
now?
They got,
yes,
some ideas,
uh-huh,
in the fields of the macromolecules.
Uh-huh. Well, yes, of
so
course.
So it's very good that younger men teach now,
mm-hmm,
what young and new organic chemistry has evolved.
Has to know, yes,
yes.
And I think that's a very wise insight from your part. You have also had quite some honors. You got the Lavoisier Medal.
Yes, and then the...
What year was that? Do you remember that?
Me?
What year did you get that? Do you remember it approximately?
I could perhaps quickly find the medal, and you would find on the back side.
Would find the year. Well, we'll look at this later.
I think it was the year when I gave this lecture
to the French
chemical
society.
Yes, yes. And then the Rockefeller stipendium.
You got that,
maybe,
yes.
Something which I can be proud on. And then I got the second Rockefeller stipendium, a special stipendium. And the direction of the Rockefeller Foundation was, go to the United States, go to all the people which by your work and their work have relations. So you can discuss with them your problems as you look at them, and they look at them. And then I had a list of perhaps 6 professors which I visited.
Could you tell me who you visited? Do you remember some?
Yes,
at least
Debye was one.
Debye,
the physical, great physicist, and I had a very nice time with him. He was, I was.
Where was he then?
First.
Where was Debye then? Well, doesn't matter really.
That's all right.
We can find out.
I was his collaborator. Sheraga greeted me and said, "Oh, you are the father of the streaming by reflection."
and
then Debye took me. That may you give the place where he is. He took me for the Mittagessen.
Yes.
There was a part of the university for women to learn cooking and household.
Oh, you got me there. I have no idea where it was.
And then he took me there, and we were served by these people, and he said that this part of this school. From Debye, I must tell you something. When he was in Germany, he had many collaborators. And then Hitler and their men tried to put out several of them. And Debye said, I think to Hitler himself, in diesem Haus bin ich der Führer.
Oh, my goodness, in this house I am the Führer. Were they Jewish that they were put out? Or?
Yes. Staudinger had several which had a grandmother.
Jewish, that was sufficient to put them out.
Yes.
So, you visited Debye in the United States.
Yes.
And who else did you see?
In Wisconsin, there was a colleague of Swedberg, and they together developed the first ultracentrifuge. I don't remember the name. But I had a very nice time with him, and he told me that not far away were a Swiss colony, New Glarus.
Yes, and it must have been in Madison.
University of Wisconsin. To this Glarus people, and I spoke with them in
Swiss
the dialect.
German. Yes, this is charming.
And then the man who crystallized the first protein. I am looking whether I can get the name.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yes. Did you meet Linus Pauling?
No. Pauling I saw later on.
In California or in Europe?
In Europe, yes.
And what about Flory, somebody, some...
Yes, oh, with Flory I had a very nice time. And he showed me the journal, Geographical Magazine.
Yeah, Geographical Magazine, yes.
And said it's a very good thing. And when I came home, I was... Abonnent.
Yeah, you had a subscription.
Yes, I was several days with Flory.
Yes. So, anything especially that you remember with Flory? Did you visit him at
home,
work?
Yes.
Or at home and at work?
And then we had long discussions about macromolecules.
You did?
Yes.
And do you remember any other people? Or? Well, it's a long time ago, probably.
Maybe that I could in
but
some
you did have,
that I...
Yes.
I got a very good instruction from the Rockefeller Institute. They said, if you go now from one place to the other, mm-hmm. keep first 2 or 3 quiet days in the new place mm-hmm. before you ring up. Mm-hmm. In the moment you ring up, they take you.
You're swamped with yes, invitations.
Yes, yes.
And so it happened.
I came back mm-hmm. very happy and uh-huh. in good health.
And it was a great experience.
And
worthwhile.
One interesting thing. What could I do for the Rockefeller mm-hmm. Institute or mm-hmm. the Rockefeller Foundation? They said, look about young men of which you think they come out good.
In and your, at Bern? In Bern,
give us
yeah.
when you are back mm-hmm. 2 or 3 names.
Yes.
And that I did.
And you did send them some
yes.
prominent young men?
Yes. And they were very thankful.
Uh-huh.
That's the way I had the first contact with the Rockefeller Foundation in Uppsala.
Yes.
The foundation gave Svedberg much money to develop the ultracentrifuge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And during the time I was there, it was worth a half year, and then I went 2 or 3 times later with new substances which I like to be investigated in mm-hmm. the ultracentrifuge.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw there Mr. Teasdale. He was one of the officers of the Rockefeller Foundation, mm-hmm. which visited Europe from mm-hmm. time to
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm. Did you lecture in the USA? Did
no,
you
no.
Not, you were not invited to any formal
lectures? I gave one lecture to the man who worked with viruses, Laufer.
Mm-hmm.
And we invited him to come to Bern to give lecture during half a year. And once he invited me for a lecture about streaming double refraction
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in his institute.
Mm-hmm.
A special part of streaming by reflection
mm-hmm.
that seeing the polydispersity, that there are molecules of different molecular weight
mm-hmm.
and that you saw here by different publications
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
was one of the things I saw with streaming double refraction
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and he was very interested to see how this streaming double reflection
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
shows polydispersity.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited me to come to what was his place?
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Good. Well, you certainly have had a very rich and varied scientific life. You have over 250 publications in at least 3 languages, in German, French and English, and even a publication in a Finnish journal, which sounded very interesting.
That is to evaluate the sedimentation velocity to get out the thickness of the chain molecules.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, now let me just maybe mention that you also have a great number of patents on manufactures, procedures and apparatus, especially on the distribution of mixtures of substances on non-miscible liquids. We have talked about this. So before we conclude the interview, I'd like to ask you another question. You have talked about your versatility, that you do a great number of things, as Staudinger said, and I was wondering how you see yourself. Do you see yourself as a disciple of Staudinger, or a pioneer in physical organic chemistry, or what is your idea about your own
a man
standing?
Who like science and sees different things which would be interesting to see closer. And then I took this and that, and I think it's very difficult to say in which field of the structure of chemistry the Schwerpunkt position lies. And I think
the center of gravity.
It comes perhaps from my youth, where I was interested in philosophy.
Yes. But
something interested me.
You went after it. Like a true scientist, yes. Or almost like a Renaissance man who is interested in many fields. But it seems that you did everything very well. Everything you did, you
I
did in depth,
you
and you did it very well.
Your visit brought me to the study of all these 15 numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And the lecture of each was for me
the reading.
A pleasure.
Yes.
Because I saw that even now I could it not do better than I did it at that time.
Yes.
But
well,
I was a lucky man. I had a wonderful chief, Staudinger. We worked optimally together, he with his great ideas, and I as a pedant who did different things in all details. And I had the luck to be able to dispose of the great number of different substances which in his great number of dissertations were produced.
Do you think that you were able to go into the details? You say pedant means you were very thorough, that he lacked the time to do, so you more or less did a lot of things for him that he could not pursue because he did not have the time.
He got his professor at Zurich for the work he did with ketene. These are all double bound to C, and
ketenes,
from this C the two valences went to another C. And he worked on ketenes very intensively as a chemist. But when he came to Zurich, he was only a teacher, and he had so much to do with teaching and organizing that he had not the time to work in the laboratory. And people like I liked very much to do the work on the laboratory table, so that gave a very good
you complemented each other very well.
Yes.
So you would say that he had he was the biggest influence in your scientific life.
Yes, yes.
Staudinger.
Yes.
Well,
and I was fascinated by the fight against him. That I could, from the philosophical point of view, judge something new and so many people...
Opponents. Yes.
With their complete
Was that, in your opinion, only scientific, or was it against his personality?
No, it was purely scientific.
Purely scientific.
Yes, yes.
It was not...
Did I tell you that when he gave the last lecture in Zurich, before he went to Freiburg, the famous mineralogist Nickli said in the discussion, "Herr Staudinger, wenn Sie Ihr Polystyrol genügend reinigen würden, würde es kristallisieren wie Naphthalin oder Benzoesal."
Meaning, Professor Staudinger, if you would purify your polystyrene enough, it would crystallize
like
Naphthalin.
Yes. And when he gave his first general lecture in Freiburg, a famous colleague with a Nobel Prize, Wieland, said him afterwards, klopfte ihm auf die Schulter und sagte, "Lieber Staudinger, organische Moleküle mit mehr als 50 C-Atomen gibt es nicht."
Oh, I have to translate that. His, Wieland said to Staudinger, "Herr Staudinger, Mr. Staudinger, organic molecules with more than 50 carbon atoms do not exist."
You see that?
Yes, that was his problem.
Yes.
Really was then scientific. And
did I tell what, yes, you have got it, what Willstetter said?
Yes.
I'm not completely convinced, but when he is right, he opens a field.
I got that. Well, I think this brings us to the conclusion of our interview. Professor Signer, I would like to thank you on behalf of the Center for History of Chemistry very much for your time and efforts and patience, and it was most stimulating and interesting to review the story of your life, your scientific life, and I appreciate very much that you have agreed to this interview. I really thank you very much.
I thank you very much. Your visit gave me the Anstoß to read my lectures again.
The motivation reread your lectures and
thank you very much.
Relive your scientific life. Thank you.